PPI.org.
We want to remind you also that if you'd like to be a part of Disability and Progress's emailer, you may email us at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Welcome. Thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Charlene Dahl is my research team. Hello, Charlene.
Good evening, everyone.
It's not evening. Not in China or... but it is here. You are right. This week, we are speaking with Kate Grathwall. Kate is the CEO and President of Vision Loss Resources, or VLR. And we will be talking about all things VLR. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming in. I'm not sure I've ever had you in the studio.
No, this is my first time.
I think you've sent some of your people, but this is the first time for you. So
it's
congratulations.
Very exciting.
Thank you. So let's start out by, can you tell me, you know, Vision Loss Resources wasn't always VLR.
It's true.
How did they start out? And just tell me how, you know, a little bit about them.
Sure. So Vision Loss Resources is the merger of the old Minneapolis Society for the Blind and the St. Paul Society for the Blind. They merged in the early 90s, about 93. And when you have two legacy societies for the blind come together, you can't pick a Minneapolis or St. Paul, so they had a contest to come up with a new name, and the name Vision Loss Resources won.
Cool. Well, I didn't actually know that part.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real contest, huh?
There was a real contest and a real winner.
Do you know who won? I'm curious.
I have a vague memory. It was either a staff person or a board member who came up with the name.
So, excellent. I had no idea. And how did you come to VLR, or Vision Loss Resources?
So 20 years ago, I was working at the Phillips Eye Institute. There mm-hmm. was an administrative layoff all through healthcare, and I was asked to join the team in the community services program. And from there, that was in the early 2000s, 2002, I joined Vision Loss Resources.
And when did you become, because you weren't CEO then, right?
No, that's true. I started as a community services specialist working with clients in the home, and then I became the manager of that program, and then in 2008, I became the CEO.
Wow. Time flies.
Boy, doesn't it?
It sure does. And you have other things that come with Vision Loss Resources, and one of them is deafblind services. Can you talk a little bit about them?
Sure. So Vision Loss Resources has three parts or three divisions, four programs. Deafblind Services Minnesota is a limited liability corporation under Vision Loss Resources. And DBSM, Deafblind Services Minnesota, serves children and adults who have a dual loss of both hearing and sight. So when we're working with young children birth to like 17, 18, we're mm-hmm. helping them become emerging communicators, learning mm-hmm. sign, integrating what they're learning at school into their community. Older adults who are not older adults, but adults who are deafblind really need just some support, a support person to help them, you know, fill out forms, get to Social Security, do a little, you know, read mail, shopping, that sort of thing.
And you also have Contract Productions?
Sure. Contract Production Services is an outgrowth. So it, too, is now an LLC of Vision Loss Resources. And it is a social enterprise that generates income that supports the organization. And it's an outgrowth of our old Minneapolis and St. Paul Societies for the Blind. Instead of having our clients as production workers, it's now more market rate because an interesting thing happened in the upper Midwest and northern tier of the United States is in the 80s when our older clients, who were also employees, started retiring. Younger people chose to have rehabilitation, learn computer skills, and go into regular market rate white collar work. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to work in a factory anymore. So, but we still have contract production services, and they are our number one supporter and donor.
Excellent. So with Vision Loss Resources, obviously we're talking about vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wondered, and actually I used to contract for you guys.
I will
give that as a disclaimer for I never knew what vision acuity people needed to have. So is there a specific, how do you measure who can apply for your services?
There is no criteria for being able to receive services from us. So, for instance, State Services for the Blind, because they're a state agency, there is a kind of a legal blindness criteria,
right,
of 2200 or a loss of field. But with Vision Loss Resources, there's no criteria. If you come in through our rehabilitation center, which is funded by State Services for the Blind, then you must meet the legal blindness criteria that defines legal blindness.
Mm.
But if you come into Vision Loss Resources for a community services program, you can have, you know, near normal vision, 20/80, 20/60, but maybe you have misaligned eyes, so your depth perception. If you're having difficulty in your activities of daily living and vision loss is part of it, you are welcome to come in through our community services program.
And that'd be more of a either community services, or if you wanted actual teachers that you might private pay. Is that
absolutely
how you work?
Right. So for our community services program, which is funded through our social enterprise contract production services and generous donations of foundations and donors, we do a lot of things for older adults with vision loss, anywhere on that continuum of, you know, 20/60 to 20/400, so near normal vision to blindness. And there are classes for rehabilitation, technology, how to do your kitchen, be safe in your kitchen, how to match your clothes, how to sort your laundry, how, you know, all the things that we need to do in a day,
mm-hmm.
and we need help relearning these skills because we need to do them non-visually once we have vision loss.
Do you accept out-of-state clients?
Absolutely. We do provide our services in our facility or in someone's home, so we don't actually travel to Milwaukee to provide services, but we do serve the 9-county metropolitan area.
Mm. And so you're a 501c3?
Correct.
So, for instance, for the people who would come to, you know, if they weren't going through State Services for the Blind, mm-hmm. who would be some of your people that support as far as, you know, donate to Vision Loss Resources?
So people who donate to Vision Loss Resources are clients, client families, and then there are various foundations both across the country and in the state of Minnesota that have, where you can write a grant for the programs you offer, serving seniors, serving kids. And so those are the major funders for Vision Loss Resources. And then, of course, we have donors, people who believe in the mission and support us.
You also had a center in St. Paul.
Correct. We had both the Minneapolis and St. Paul offices, and we're no longer offering services in our St. Paul office because we've moved, or our Lindale office in Minneapolis, because we've recently moved.
So is the St. Paul office gone?
The St. Paul office for services is no longer open for services. It is still an area in which we have production through contract production services.
Okay.
So the building is still owned by Vision Loss Resources, but there are no programs there. We are now having programs in the Eden Prairie Center, Community Center, Eden Prairie Community Center, and mm-hmm. then the 94 in Lexington. I can't remember the nonprofit's
That's okay.
name.
That's okay. It'll come to you.
It will.
We'll be sitting here
It's
talking.
A wonderful nonprofit, and everybody knows its name, and it's gone from my mind for the moment. Wilder Foundation.
Oh, excellent. See? Told you.
Yep.
So, Kate, we were talking about some of the programs offered and things like Braille, keyboarding. You still have keyboarding, right?
Absolutely.
Keyboarding, computer, daily living skills. Do you still have a shop program?
We don't. During the pandemic, it was one of the things we had to close down our programs, as everyone did during the month, closed down from the governor. Mm. But then as we brought programs back, it was one of the programs we weren't able to bring back.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how large is your staff?
So when we think about our staff, we have the DBSM staff, Deafblind Services Minnesota, mm-hmm. and that is probably about 60 part-time individuals serving the state of Minnesota. So we have clients up in northern Minnesota, southern Minnesota, and they work part-time hourly to help support kids or adults with deafblindness and connecting to the sighting hearing world. And then in our rehabilitation center, which is our on-site rehabilitation program, we have 9. And then our community services staff is a little small at this time, too, but we have like 195 active volunteers supporting that program as well right now.
So what kind of training do the staff need? You know, does one need to be able to work at Vision Loss Resources?
Depending on what program you're in, the Rehabilitation Center, Deafblind Services Minnesota, or the Community Services Program, each of them have slightly different, I wouldn't say, it's not a licensure. We're not part of the medical community, so there isn't licensure. Mm-hmm. But for our deafblind staff who work in Deafblind Services Minnesota, there's training programs that they go through to reach a certain level of certification for their ASL or other skills that they're teaching our young clients. If you're in the Rehabilitation Center, you need to be certified by State Services for the Blind to teach your particular area, whether it's life skills, cooking, Braille, technology. And then in community services, we often have a mix of people who come from other area disciplines, like it might be social work, it might be counseling, it might be other areas where they've done what we call agency training. So they meet certain criteria. Again, State Services for the Blind wants a certain level of proficiency in our staff.
So I am familiar with the what the State Services for the Blind requires.
Yes.
Do they require that your community staff that might train for like grade 1 Braille or something be the yes. same certified as somebody who was teaching in actually
the rehabilitation center.
Yes, center?
Absolutely. So we have a technologist who does a lot of technology training mm-hmm. with older adults in the community, and she, of course, is certified, so she could teach in the rehabilitation center or she could teach in the community.
Gotcha. How many volunteers did you say you had?
Probably we have over 100 on the rolls, if you will, but I would say we're in the 80, 90, 95 is what I've recently heard, active volunteers serving clients or supporting a community services program. So out in the community with either bringing people together or serving people in their homes.
And what kind of things would the volunteers be doing?
So volunteers typically help with shopping, taking someone grocery shopping, helping read labels, helping them make sure they pick what they want to pick. When you can't see, it's hard to know what are the ripe bananas, what are the good tomatoes.
Right.
Or I want this particular type of milk or beans. Also reading mail.
Yeah.
It's we all get a ton of mail. What's junk mail? What's a bill? How do I write a check, pay a bill? So our volunteers will support our clients doing that sort of thing. Sometimes it's shopping. You know, we all need tennis shoes or a winter coat, something like that, Christmas presents. Or going out and visiting friends. Sometimes they're just there to help, whether it's a physical navigation sighted guide or to be a support. And then, of course, they help us when we have community activities, whether it's, you know, getting together to do some sort of class or getting together for some activity, volunteers support us there as well.
Do the volunteers receive training? And if so, what kind?
Well, of course. There's quite a protocol for training our volunteers so that they understand, you know, good listening skills. We're not here to do for our clients. We're here to support our clients. Training and sighted guide. Where do you go for new resources? When a question a volunteer can't answer is asked, what is the appropriate staff person? You know, so boundaries, all of the things that you would want your volunteers to know to be able to keep that professional relationship.
Yes. I understand, you know, during the pandemic, as we often talk about here, everything kind of shut down, and there was a lot of scrambling to figure out how we were going to resume life as usual. And of course, life didn't resume as usual, but it had to resume in different ways.
Yes.
So now that we did that and that there's more people that are coming back, how has Vision Loss Resources changed its model of teaching or training?
Well, when the pandemic came, we serve a lot of older adults with vision loss through our community services program. And we also serve in person. So all our programs are at different levels of in person with our clients. During the pandemic, Deafblind Services Minnesota and our volunteers came up with really creative ways to support our clients while staying socially distant. Many of our clients didn't think they could learn Zoom, but we talked to them on the phone, we sent them links, and now we have several large support groups that meet multiple times a month with multiple, you know, different hosts. Now that we're coming back into person, coming back to in-person, clients are like, well, you know, this Zoom is handy. Winter's coming. I don't want to be on Metro forever. But also there's this need for people to be together. So we are starting in-person activities again at the Wilder Center, University in Lexington, out at the Eden Prairie Community Center, and then, of course, at our new facility. So people are starting to come back out, but it's slow. But it's transformative. You know, our clients said, I'm 80 years old. I can't learn to do this. And now they're 80 years old and they love it.
Yes. I think Zoom and all of the different platforms of that sort provided a very interesting outreach and needed one for people for everyone in the pandemic. And I don't see it going away. So I think it's going to be here to stay. But I think that's, you know, that's part of it. I don't think it is the same as live, you know, in person, but it certainly fills a niche and it is certainly doable with most things.
Yes.
So I think that's what's going to save a lot of businesses and training for people like you and me.
Well, and one of our taglines is connect, adapt, and thrive. And during the pandemic, we started calling all our clients so that we could connect with them. And then we started adapting and figuring out how can we do what we do socially distantly, safe, so that everyone felt comfortable. And, you know, programs are coming back. What rehab center is full. Deafblind Services is seeing, you know, their client numbers are up too. We're still coming out of the pandemic, but people are figuring out how to live in the new world.
Let's get to the meat of the conversation, Kate. You guys decided to make a big move. For more reasons than one, it's a big move. So why, first of all, what prompted it?
So you're right. It was a huge decision, and it wasn't a fast decision. It was a long decision, and it took a long time. And we'd been kind of running into this issue. So for people who don't know, Vision Loss Resources has been on the corner of Lindale and Franklin for 75 years.
Yes.
So that's a long time.
It is a very long time.
Long time. So we bought one building in 1947. And then we built another building in 1958, and then a final building in 1972.
Oh, wait, where was the final one?
So the final one is that big building that's kind of built into the hill. It's really hard to see as you drive by on Lindale from the north. And it's the production and warehouse.
Okay, okay.
On one of our big production floors. So as we've grown over the years, we just kept building buildings. And, you know, 75 years is a lot of change on a neighborhood corner.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were finding is, with the recession of 08-09, changing times, changing funding streams, some of the funding we used to have through big grants like United Way and mm-hmm. other things started changing. So the philanthropic world underwent some changes.
Indeed, and we felt it too.
Yeah, I bet you did. Everybody did in the nonprofit
yes.
world. So we were relying greatly on our contract production services to support the agency and the services we provide to the community. And in order to continue to do that, our contract production services needed to grow. Well, we're in three buildings, and there's only so many nooks and crannies. So in 2016, we started having this conversation. The board, the staff, we finally got the board, not on board, but, you know, educating them to the need. I admit it that the minimum wage ordinance in Minneapolis also was a huge factor. We calculated how much, rightly so, everyone needs a wage they can live with and be able to take care of their families. But it meant our costs were going to increase dramatically by 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started looking in 2018. We put the building up for sale in 2018. We had a buyer. We were all set to sell our building, buy our building in 2020, spring mm-hmm. of 2020. We all know what happened. A switch was turned, COVID came.
Yes.
That all went away. So it really took us 4 years. And we finally found a building. And hopefully if anyone out there wants to buy a building, we have a beautiful building on the corner.
Oh, it's not sold yet.
Not yet, but we have people who are interested. And mm-hmm. anyone who's interested can call us. But yes, so that's the hope. We've moved. We bought a new building last year. We renovated it this year, and we just moved in 2 weeks ago.
So, you know I'm going to ask this.
Of course.
Why Little Canada?
I'm so glad you asked, Sam, because a lot of people want to know.
Yes.
So here were our parameters. The first and foremost one is it had to be inside the 494-694 ring
mm-hmm.
so that we would always be able to have bus line accessibility, mm-hmm. metro accessibility. We also wanted to make sure that whatever we bought, whatever building we bought, we were separating our contract production services and our program areas so that our clients never had to walk across a parking lot again
right.
and dance around a semi-truck.
Ooh, I remember that
you
well.
Do. Yeah. So those were some of our big important things. We wanted to be able to be easily accessible. I know Little Canada sounds really far away, but from the Lindale building, it is exactly 16 miles. It takes me 20 minutes to get from, because I live a mile away from mm-hmm. the Lindale building, it takes me 20 minutes to get to work. In a way, it's more accessible than the Lindale building because you don't have to go through the 9435W Commons. And I have heard many a story from our clients sitting in a metro bus in that traffic jam trying to get off of 94 to our building on Lindale and Franklin. So it sounds really far away, but it's really easily accessible to the freeway, both 35W, 35E, 494, 694. So it's our clients are finding it easier to get to.
All right. So I wanted to pick out some pros and cons so
Absolutely.
That you could. So let's talk a little bit about, so you got, sorry, you were able to separate the production contractor
mm-hmm.
stuff. That is good because
mm-hmm.
I do remember making many trips across the parking lot, holding my breath,
yeah.
hoping the semi didn't come so I could go relieve my dog.
Correct.
But for me, coming from a northwest suburb, going there feels so far away. And I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Are you worried, though, that it is just inside the ADA area that Metro could have issues with busing there?
Taking a city bus is more challenging because of COVID and the pandemic. City bus lines have been shortened. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, the bus has to have ridership.
Mm-hmm.
So the closest bus stop is about half a mile away.
Right.
But Metro has had no trouble finding us. And our clients and our staff, remember 9 of our rehab instructors. I don't know that all nine of them ride Metro, but a good number of them do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so are the staff finding it not too bad to commute?
Staff are really enjoying it. Several of our staff have moved up into the area to be closer to their workplace. Some of us do that, move to be near our work.
Right.
And what they're finding is because of the freeway access, it's pretty easy. Their metros aren't, you know, again, it's getting away from that intersection of 94 right. and 35E. So there's not the huge wait times in traffic.
Did, when you considered places to go, was there any thought of figuring out a place in Minneapolis, or was that just not an option for various other reasons?
Being in Minneapolis would have been lovely, and it wasn't feasible. There are no buildings of the size that we needed to be able to support contract production services growth to support the programs inside the city limits of Minneapolis. Even I was hoping St. Paul Midway, right between Minneapolis and St.
Yeah,
Paul. But all that type of, you know, warehouse space and, you know, lovely office space was all kind of gobbled up in the mid-2000s, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010. That was all developed.
Yeah.
So we looked... We looked out by New Hope. We looked way out by Maplewood. We looked way south by the airport. And when it was all said and done, even the building we had the purchase agreement on was just north of St. Paul, not as far as Little Canada.
Right.
But it wasn't as nice or as good. We need apartments for our rehab students to live in. We need actual city streets where we can teach people mobility. Mm-hmm. So this place really had everything we needed.
So that is a good thing to bring back up because I realize you did have apartments near that you would rent for clients. So where will they stay?
So they are 2 miles away in Shoreview. So it's just down the road. So it's a very quick metro ride. And it's the nicest apartments we've ever been able to rent.
I bet they have.
Workout room. They have, you know, all the amenities. It's pretty nice and very reasonably priced.
Is the rent? Did you buy this building or are you renting
the building in Little Canada?
Yes,
we bought it.
Okay, was it easier on the budget than the one in Lyndale?
Well, we owned the Lyndale building for years and years and years, and so...
Ah, so that was just kind of a
So the Lyndale building, of course, had costs, energy, heat, lighting, plumbing.
And it so was an old building.
It was an old set of three buildings. And so this building, new building, will be more efficient and it won't cost as much to run.
Talk about the separation of contract services and the rehab center. One of the things that always bothered me as a staff person was that you really got to smell all the interesting things that they may have been working with or using up there. Is that more separated now?
It's very much more separated. So think of a box. And then think of one side of the box having another box inside of that box. So that's basically the situation we have. So we have a big concrete box that is the warehouse and packaging and shipping is all on one side. And on the front of the box, inside, tucked inside, is another smaller box. And inside that concrete box is the rehabilitation center, classrooms, teaching kitchen, braille technology, administrative offices, HR, you know, the photocopy room, the lunch, you know, all the things. So it's very much, think of our old rehabilitation center, it's pretty much everything that was there but packaged more closer together, just down the hall. So the student lounge is just down the hall from, you know, across the way from Braille or down the hall from technology. Lockers are on the way to technology, just down the hall from ADL. So everything is close and compact and neat. And what our students are saying is this is much easier to find my way around than the last place.
Yeah, you have lockers.
We have lockers.
You didn't at the old place.
Oh, we did. They were just in odd corners.
Ah, okay.
Very odd corners.
I rarely saw them used.
Yeah.
I guess you did do. You did have them.
Students had lockers, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are the classrooms open or are they closed classrooms then as well like the other ones were?
You can have your door open or closed as needed. We do more learning, you know, like the rehab kitchen has always had the door open or closed depending on, you know, some people don't mind people walking in. Some people don't want people walking in. Sometimes when you're doing a Braille lesson with a new student, you want
right.
to close the door
absolutely.
For concentration.
Yep.
Sometimes
yep.
in technology, it's okay to have three people going at once because they're all advanced learners and they can do that.
Yes. What was the response from VLR counselors when you chose your spot and announced it?
You mean the State Services for the Blind Counselors?
I'm sorry. Yes, State
yes,
Services
certainly.
For the Blind.
Well, they were very excited because, you know, they had recently had some moves and changes and renovations.
Mm-hmm.
And we are actually having a tour with the State Services for the Blind Counselors tomorrow.
Ah.
So they're very excited to see this space. They're really pleased that our apartments are so near and so nice. So I think it's being greeted by everybody, and we're having a big open house. Can I give a pitch?
You may.
Thank you. So call us at 871-222-2612. We get to keep all our numbers and all our email addresses, even though we've moved. October 25th, Tuesday, 10 to 2. Call for a reservation because we're giving people time slots so we can make sure that everyone gets a good walkthrough and a good understanding. So the rehab State Services for the Blind are coming for a tour tomorrow. I think they'll be pleased. Everyone has been very pleased with the space.
As with anything, change is always difficult, especially
yeah.
probably for the older people who know how easy they had it in some ways to get to VLR.
Sure.
What do you tell them?
Well, we are bringing back our programming for community services, our older adults.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a little challenging. People have been wanting in person. And
right.
we started in person at the Wilder Center and in person at Eden Prairie Center while we were, you know, in transition between two buildings. We're just settling in. I know we're going to have programming up at the Little Canada location shortly. Clients aren't, though they want to come out, they haven't been showing up in droves. So I think it's like everything new. You just said
yes.
it. Change is change.
Change is hard.
And change takes time.
Yes, it does.
And we're also, remember, running into, it turned very winterish today. So
yeah,
I think over
it's
the winter,
there, huh?
people will come and try both our programming at the Wilder Center, our programming out in Eden Prairie, and programming at Vision Loss Resources in Little Canada.
Now, I forgot, the Wilder Center in Eden Prairie, are they rehabilitation programming as well?
Nope, it's only for the community center. Because
okay.
one of the things we realized is, even though Lyndale was known, we had people coming from Maplewood. We had
oh,
people
yes.
coming from Plymouth.
All over.
We had people coming from Coon Rapids and Anoka. That's not easy to get to Lyndale mm-hmm. from any of those places. Plus, we have people in the Southern Metro, Richfield, Edina, you know, Rosemont. So our Little Canada location is not close to someone living in Rosemont or Eden Prairie or even Western Edina or Minnetonka. So we are starting to do is get program locations for community activities throughout the metro. So we're starting with two, Eden Prairie and the Wilder Center at Lexington and 94.
Yes, you had quite a activity center.
Yeah.
And now that's another change.
Yeah.
So what will happen? What will you do?
We're building it back as COVID and time allows. So during the pandemic, people weren't going out anywhere.
Right.
We had all kinds of activities. But during COVID, we couldn't. And now we're trying to build these community locations where we can bring people together for the activities we used to do and even new activities, new education, new learning to engage our clients so that they can engage in their community. Bingo has always been one of our clients' favorite activities. Well, why do we have to do bingo in our facility.
That's true.
When we can do it in Eden Prairie, we can do it in St. Paul, so that people can come to their community centers, and we can help their community centers be more adaptive. What's more fun than going by a room full of laughing people and then to learn, oh, they're visually impaired. I should tell my mother about that. So it's a way for us to be out in the community, help our clients engage in their community, and let our sighted community know, wow, that's interesting. I want to learn more about that.
You have some rehabilitation classes still online?
Yes, for some people it works better to do a little bit, but mostly all the rehabilitation center is in person. A client may be, if they are having a cold or flu, we're really trying to watch people not coming in sick. They can have assignments to do at home, but we really are doing in-person classes for the rehabilitation center, all of them.
So, Miss Kate.
Yes.
You are getting ready to take another venture in your life. You are retiring.
It's true. It's public, and I can say it. I am retiring at the end of March in 2023.
So I'm just curious, why so close to this move?
Well, a couple of reasons. I joined, I became the CEO in 08, 09 during the recession then.
Oh, yes.
And we have been building our board, building our staff. We found a new home. We're putting together a brand new 5-year strategic plan for the organization. And it made sense. I've done my bit, if you will. Mm-hmm. I got us through the H1N1 pandemic, the recession of 08, 09, various other things, now COVID, all of this, the move. Now it's time for a new leader to take us to the next place. And it also seemed like a good idea.
And another adventure for you.
Yes.
So, are people worried?
I think whenever there's change, and there's been so much change over the last few years.
There COVID, certainly has.
Vaccine, you know, all these things. We'll not talk about politics, but there are changes, there. And so any change, I think, makes people nervous and uncomfortable. But the thing that I am telling my staff and that we are working on with our board of directors is change is the constant thing. If we keep moving with the change, connecting, adapting, and thriving, as we say at Vision Loss Resources, we'll manage the change. Vision loss is a huge change. We're in the business of helping people deal with change. So I'm in the business of helping my staff, the board, everybody deal with this change. We've got a search committee. The board is working with some of the best consultants in the Twin Cities, Ballinger Leafblad, as our consultants on the CEO search. So the board is actively engaged in preparing a new strategic plan. Staff are actively engaged. We've even gone out and asked clients, what do you think Vision Loss Resources, Deafblind Services Minnesota, should be doing strategically over the next 5 years? So we're getting everybody's input on where we're going to go. We're going to get people's input on what does the new leader need to be? What are we looking for? What are the challenges ahead? What does our strategic plan say? So we're going to do all the things that prepare us to walk forward into the changes that are going to happen no matter what anyways. So let's be prepared.
Somebody once told me, growth is optional, but change is inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
So I've carried that with me, even though I myself have fought certain change.
We all do.
I want to talk, though, because I feel this is very important. As you say, you've carried VLR through many facets of its, you know, where it's gone. And so this is an interesting thing to be looking for a new leader.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your expectations or qualifications for, you know, hiring someone who's going to, replace you?
Right. Well, to be clear, I'm not hiring anyone. That's the board of directors' job.
Okay.
So what I can tell you about is the process.
And all right.
That process is we're talking to the board, talking to the staff, and talking to, you know, partners and clients, people who have a stakeholders in this role. What do you need to be a CEO? Well, you need some managerial experience, financial experience. You need a lot of ability to talk to people, mm-hmm. listen to people, hear what people are saying, analyze things. But really, it's a team. People are thinking, I'm leaving and that's the big change. But what people don't realize is I didn't do any of these things myself. I didn't move the organization. I didn't grow CPS. I didn't find all the new staff. I didn't change all the programs to meet all our clients' needs. It's a team effort. My staff do those things. Our wonderful rehabilitation teachers, our amazing Deafblind Services Minnesota, they are VLR. It's not me. They're Deafblind Services Minnesota. I'm more the conductor. So I lead the band, but I don't play all the instruments. So VLR will be fine, and we will find an... Well, not me. I'm not in charge there. It's kind of nice. It's one of the things I'm not in charge of. But the board and our consultants will find an excellent replacement for me. Because remember, once upon a time, I was a new leader too.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about something that concerns me.
Okay.
As somebody who's worked there and mm-hmm. somebody who's seen many, many, many people come through there. Mm-hmm. We all who know Vision Loss Resources know that there are, well, technically there's more than two, but in the exact direct Twin Cities, there's contractors like me mm-hmm. and there's two rehabilitation facilities, mm-hmm. you and Blind Inc.
Right.
And I've always, you know, kind of separated as Blind Inc. is NFB, mm-hmm. And you guys are any, just kind of, you accept anyone.
Right. We're a private nonprofit serving the right. blind and visually impaired. Right.
So, but what I always worry about is that I hope there will be some watch and ability to make sure that there's not two NFBs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really feel there, as a contractor, I have picked up, you know, people from both facilities mm-hmm. and later taught people from both facilities who wanted right. refreshers or right. didn't catch something the first time for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories are there. And they sure. talk about what each one it, or whatever one they went to was like.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hate to see no option.
I understand what you're saying. And I, you know, I can't guarantee anything. I think it would be a radical culture change. And it's unlikely, Sam, because the leader is only one person.
Mm, yes.
And we have, when we look at all our staff, and we didn't count contract production services, but we, you know, we have almost 80 professional staff in one capacity or another. So the board and our consultants are likely going to choose someone who would fit the culture that exists.
Excellent.
And there are different cultures, as you mm-hmm. say.
Yes, there are.
Yeah.
Yes, there are. I always think of you guys as a little bit more laid back.
Well, but, you know, we're kind of particular about cane work and
you are,
braille.
But what I mean is you have a wider breadth of what you accept.
Right.
For, you don't have to be on 494, so to speak. You can be on
yes.
several different lanes
yep.
And be okay yes. to come to you.
Yeah.
So I value that
mm-hmm.
and feel like there should always be freedom of choice with these large facilities
yes.
and would hope that that stays that way.
I believe it will. I believe it is our culture. It's what we believe that, you know, everybody comes to their rehabilitation with what they have and everyone should be encouraged to use all that they have to live their best rehabilitation so that they can be as independent as they wish to be.
But you get the concern.
I do.
All right. Excellent.
Yeah.
yeah. Take that one with you.
I will.
So the move will change, you know, as we talked about, a lot of people's decision with how they choose.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to describe the difference separate from me, from, you know, the difference between you and Blind Inc., how mm-hmm. would you describe you?
Well, I think it's important for people to understand we do a lot of the same things. So
yes.
we teach Braille and using a cane, orientation, mobility, technology. Mm-hmm. I think the difference is philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
And we describe it this way when people ask us this question, what's the difference between us? So vision loss resources, we tend to find out where the person is. I'm sure Blind Ink does this as well, and mm-hmm. what are their needs. For Blind Ink, it's very important to do all training under the blindfold at all time. That's
yes.
their philosophy, and they mm-hmm. believe that that is the best way to help someone really build their non-visual skills.
Right.
And for some people, that works beautifully. And it doesn't for others, because we're all different and we all learn differently. At Vision Loss Resources, we do a lot of work under the blindfold, but it isn't every day, all day. We also, as Blind Ink believes, that it's really important to do things non-visually so you can believe in yourself when you need to.
Right.
But we also believe that if you have some vision and it's usable vision and it's going to help you, learn how to use the technology, the devices, the adaptations, and the skills to use the remaining vision you have. But also know that if, here's one of my favorite, most people don't know that I'm visually impaired.
Oh, one I didn't of my, know that, actually.
Of course you didn't. Not everybody knows. But it's fine. So it's not, you know, I'm one of those near normal people.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a depth perception issue.
Okay.
And when I get on a stairway that is grating, and so I can see through.
Oh, that will throw you.
That it does. And so what have I learned? How do I adapt? I don't look down. Because if you think about it, you know this, Sam, steps and risers are standard
yeah.
almost everywhere. So I can walk down holding the handrail and know exactly where my feet are going. I don't have to look at my feet to walk down steps. So we teach people to use what you have. Prepare for if your vision changes, because vision loss, that's why we say vision loss, it's often a continuum. And you may be here, and it may change tomorrow. That's how we explain the difference between us.
Gotcha. I wonder, you know, you yourself, personally, probably could have tried to apply to work at Blind Ink.
Mm-hmm.
What made you choose vision loss?
I didn't know much about Blind Ink. And frankly, I don't have any skills that they would have wanted. Because at that time when I applied at Vision Loss Resources, I had a master's of science in vision rehabilitation. So my skills were teaching people to use devices to use their remaining vision, which is not something that Blind Ink does. So I couldn't really
That's
apply
true.
To Blind Ink because they don't really need me.
How can people get in touch with you?
So if you want to find out more about Vision Loss Resources, you can just go to the website, visionlossresources.org. You can always call us at 612-871-2222. It's 42. Oh,
42.
Yeah. We've had that number forever. So those are the easiest ways to get to us and learn more about what we do.
So, Kate, I'm sure that you have seen so much going through this. What has vision loss, your time there, given to you personally or taught you?
Interesting. Because as I'm getting ready to leave, you think back and you look back. And I would say the greatest thing that I've gotten from Vision Loss Resources is it doesn't really matter what happens to you. There is someone there who can help you, or you can help them, and you know about our peer counseling program and how we actually all help each other. It's this incredible group of people who support each other, who support our greater community to get through things. It's one of the most amazing adaptive places I've ever worked, the most caring place I've ever worked. I believe in the mission with all my heart and soul, and I'll carry it with me wherever I go. And I will do whatever I can always to help this organization continue doing the amazing work it does. So it's really hard to say, what have I gotten? Because I've gotten everything. You know, it's just been such a wonderful place to work. All the wonderful people. Now that I'm leaving, I think of all the people who came before me, all
yes.
the amazing teachers in the Rehabilitation Center, wonderful clients I've served over the years. It's just an amazing organization.
What do you see for the future of VLR?
I see them growing and expanding, serving more people. Vision loss is on the rise, not so much for younger people, or we have excellent medical care now for diabetes and other things that used to cause blindness and still do, but it's our older adults with macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma. I see vision loss resources engaging those folks more. Now with technology, people want to be online. They want to have access. We can help people with that. We can help connect people to people who are going through the same thing. Change. You know, everything's changing.
Charlene is my research team. And Charlene, I was just wondering, is there any questions you have for Kate?
No, the ones I had, you guys covered it. So
nice to know I'm thorough.
Kudos for a long career, Kate, and we wish you well.
Thank you, Charlene.
Well, is there anything more you'd like to tell us, Kate? Or, I mean, this is a big... Are you nervous to retire?
Of course. Because, you know, I've been working all my life, and what am I going to do with myself? But I also know that it'll probably come right to me, figure it out. I never dreamed I'd ever become a CEO. It wasn't on my list of things to do, but it was an opportunity that, well, that seems like an interesting thing to try. So I'll take a break, and then I'll find another interesting thing to try.
Yes, my guess is you have enough hobbies that you won't be bored.
That's right.
Well, I wish you luck. And if I don't get to the open house, I will be making an appointment to come
Absolutely.
And see it, because I would like to see the new spot. You know I'll be comparing.
Of course, and you'll love it. I know you will. Thank you so much, Sam.
Do you have a thought of trying to maybe bring back some kind of shop or work with wood or something?
We actually do. We, I believe out in Eden Prairie, there is a wood shop. So I'm not sure if it's Wilder, but I think it's Eden Prairie. There's a wood program that we're trying to engage with so that we can have wood shop, not so much in the rehabilitation center, but as a way for people to engage with wood again.
I know many people really enjoyed that type of work. And I think it brought a sense of pride and independence.
And confidence.
Yes.
Great confidence.
Yes.
There's nothing more powerful than being a blind person with a power tool.
Exactly. I like how you put that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I'm sad that this is the first time you've been in the studio.
I know.
Now you're just leaving.
Well, but now I can be a consultant. You can have me in any time.
That's true. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sam.
Good night.
Good night.
This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KPI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Charlene Dahl is my research team. We've been speaking with Kate Grathwell, CEO and President of Vision Loss Resources. My name is Sam, the host of this show. If you want to be on my email list, you may email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Thanks so much for listening. As always. KPI.org.